My Life Transformed in Napa by Nancy Manahan, Napa College English teacher, business owner, writer. Read by Nancy Manahan. Becoming a feminist. I grew up in a small Minnesota town, imbibing the pervasive 1950s and 1960s sexist beliefs and restrictions. It wasn't until graduate school that Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique, 1963, and Simone de Beauvoir's The Second Sex, 1969, struck me like bolts of lightning, revealing women's oppression that had been completely invisible to me. I became active in the women's liberation movement, devouring feminist books and periodicals, peeling back layer upon layer of sexist assumptions. In 1973, I took a women in literature class at San Francisco City College. Although I had a bachelor's and master's degree in literature, my education had focused completely on male writers, an imbalance I hadn't even noticed. It was a revelation to discover powerful women's literature from Sappho to Mary Wollstonecraft, from George Eliot to Virginia Woolf, from Virginia Willa Cather, Flannery O'Connor, and Gertrude Stein to Doris Lessing, Maxine Hong Kingston, and Toni Morrison. I wrote a paper for that class, Lesbians and Literature, which became the basis for an article in Mother Jones magazine. I didn't use my last name for fear of losing my part-time teaching job at Napa College. The essay appeared under the byline Nancy M. Ruthchild, a tribute to my mother, Ruth Manahan. Even without claiming full credit for the piece, I was thrilled to share my reading journey from Radcliffe Hall's tragic Well of Loneliness, 1928, and Simone de Beauvoir's chapter on the lesbian, which reassured me that lesbians weren't necessarily freaks, alcoholics, or predators, to positive portrayals in novels like Jane Brule's poignant This Is Not For You, 1970, and Isabel Miller's inspiring novel Patience and Sarah, 1972. After moving from San Francisco to Napa in 1975, I discovered assertiveness training. Evie Trevithan, the director of the Women's Reentry Program at Napa College, began teaching assertiveness in 1976. I shadowed Evie in her classroom, learning to say no calmly and directly, ask for what I wanted, set boundaries, and communicate clearly. Evie's class was so popular, the college offered an additional section, which I fortunately was asked to teach. Helping other women learn to speak their truth and stand up for themselves gave me opportunities to practice these new behaviors myself. Friends and colleagues also educated me. Lauren Coodley, my Napa friend and neighbor, taught women's history at Napa College and shared many inspiring books with me. She still does. Ruth Bates, my closest Napa friend, helped lay down the lesbian feminist bedrock of my consciousness. Ruth's 1980 Lesbian Crossroads, which I helped edit, was one of the first lesbian books by a major lesbian publisher. Peg Cruikshank, my San Francisco friend, introduced me to the National Women's Studies Association and feminist scholars. Peg included my Mother Jones essay under my real name, finally, in her 1980 collection, The Lesbian Path, the first book made up entirely of personal narratives by lesbians. She published another of my essays, Homophobia in the Classroom, in her 1982 book, Lesbian Studies, Present and Future. Teaching at Napa College. I arrived in California from Illinois State University in 1972 with my new master's degree to join my lover. 5 years earlier, Joanna and I had fallen in love at the Mary Knoll Missionary Sisters Novitiate in Valley Park, Missouri. I left Mary Knoll during my second year, admitting that the religious life wasn't for me. Jean left half a year later. From 1972 to 1975, Jean and I lived in a one-room efficiency apartment at 940 Sutter Street, San Francisco. Since I couldn't find a college English teaching job in the Bay Area, I accepted Napa College's offer of an advanced placement English class at Justin Siena High School on the north side of Napa. For almost 3 years, I commuted by Greyhound bus from San Francisco to Napa 4 or 5 days a week. I loved teaching. I could hardly believe I was getting paid to discuss literature and help young people learn to write. Soon I was offered classes on the main Napa Valley College campus. In addition to introduction to literature, composition, and assertiveness training, I taught English as a second language, reading, introduction to the novel, literature by women, and philosophy of women's roles. These last two were initiated by the Women's Reentry Program, which recognized classes that were needed, got them approved by the curriculum committee, and found people qualified to teach them. I was lucky to be part of WREP. This little community college in a conservative town, a vibrant women's studies curriculum transformed many lives. All the WREP teachers were part-timers in those early years at the bottom of the pay scale. I earned $3,000 a year with no job security. Despite our second-class status at the college, we threw ourselves into our work in the classroom and in the community. Feminist teachers and community women started the Rape Crisis Network and other services for women, served on the NAPA Commission on the Status of Women, and worked to elect women to public office. Many of us went door to door educating voters about the 1978 Briggs Initiative, which would have banned gay and lesbian teachers and possibly anyone who supported gay rights from teaching in California's public schools. Knocking on doors, I felt terrified at having to say gay teachers, sure that people would suspect I was one. What a relief when the Briggs Initiative was defeated, the first time an anti-gay rights campaign had failed. Risking my teaching position. In 1977, a year before the Briggs Initiative, I almost did lose my Napa College job. I get a lump in my throat just thinking about it. The anthology for my advanced placement Introduction to Literature class at Justiniana High School contained almost all white male authors. To create more balance, I drew up a list of 40 books by African American, Asian American, Hispanic American, and Native American novelists. I also included a couple of working class and gay writers. If each of the 25 students chose a different novel to report on, they would all be exposed to 25 cross-cultural authors. On that reading list was Rita Mae's Ruby Fruit Jungle, published in 1973, about a young lesbian discovering herself. It was funny and well-written. Two women in the class chose that novel for their book report. Napa Bookstore didn't carry it, but I offered an optional field trip to the San Francisco Women's Bookstore, Old Wives' Tales, so students could choose to go see thousands of books by women and buy titles unavailable in Napa. The next week, the parents of these two high school seniors complained to the college that I was exposing their children to the gay lifestyle. Ruby Fruit Jungle was immoral filth. I was a crackpot. The dean of instruction called me into his office. He showed me the parents' letters with copies of offending passages from Ruby Fruit Jungle. He suggested I write to the parents explaining the assignment and apologizing for whatever was unsuitable in the material. I wanted to stand my ground. This was a matter of academic freedom, but I didn't dare. I was frightened by the accusations and dreaded losing my position. So, humiliated and sick at heart, I wrote a letter of apology. When the Board of Trustees dealt with the parents' complaint, my letter was presented as evidence that I would stick to the approved curriculum. Apparently, I came very close to losing my job. I recently learned that the decisive voice in that decision was that of Napa College President George Clark. A staunch defender of academic freedom, he encouraged the board not to terminate me. During those decades, people routinely lost their jobs for being gay. If George Clark had known that I was a lesbian, I wonder if he would have been so supportive of my academic freedom. Although being fired would have been devastating, I still feel ashamed of not standing up to that homophobia. That scare pushed me way back into the closet. I deleted the gay titles on my optional reading list, didn't mention gay or lesbian authors, and didn't share anything about my life. Years passed before I dared to include a lesbian writer in my literature by women class. By then, the gay liberation was growing, and I had a stronger support network at the college. I told a lesbian who came out to me that I would support her if she decided to be open in the class. Still, I remained in the closet and felt overwhelming anxiety whenever the subject arose in my classroom. The dissonance between teaching exciting, empowering women's literature and feminist theory while hiding who I was eventually became too inauthentic to bear. I could no longer be guarded with my students while asking them to share their lives openly. In 1981, feeling as if the ground would break open beneath me, I came out to one of my women's reentry classes. Some students looked shocked. Others said they appreciated my courage. I later heard that a few students told others not to take my class unless they wanted to hear about the gay lifestyle. However, I escaped further official censure. I believe I was the first openly gay or lesbian teacher at Napa College. Co-parenting. The year after Jean and I moved to Napa, we separated. The next year, in 1977, a new physical education teacher was hired at Justin Siena High School. My students there raved about Miss Evans. I discovered they were right. Barbara Evans was special. One of our first dates was painting the Feminist Connection building on Main Street. Even though we were working inside and people driving by couldn't see us, as teachers in a Catholic high school, we were taking a risk. After dating for several months, Barbara took the further risk of moving in with me at 541 Montgomery Street in Napa. Also living at 541 Montgomery were Lauren Coodley and her husband Bill McCune. In 1977, Bill and Lauren's first child was born. I offered to help care for Caitlin, who suffered from colic, and started taking her one or two nights a week so her parents could sleep. I remember pushing Caitlin in her stroller around Fuller Park with bricks and gallons of water in my backpack, getting in shape for backpacking trips. Over the next years, we learned that having three adults available, and after Barbara moved in, four, was an excellent arrangement for preventing parental burnout. When Barbara and I picked Caitlin up at her preschool, she told classmates who asked about us that we were her fairy godmothers. I knew I wouldn't have children and felt grateful to co-parent this delightful child for the next 15 years. Starting Gemini Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning. Barbara eventually became disillusioned with the politics of the Catholic high school and tired of worrying about being fired if the school learned she was a lesbian. She was looking for another line of work when we heard about two women in Southern California who ran a successful carpet and upholstery cleaning business. By then, I was taking a machine tool technology class at Napa College and exploring other non-traditional career possibilities. Barbara and I spent 2 days following this Southern California couple as they went into homes and steam cleaned the carpets and furniture. They were enthusiastic about being their own bosses. They loved doing practical physical work. Unlike teaching, the results of cleaning a dirty carpet or sofa were immediately apparent. Barbara and I began attending classes offered by the California Carpet Cleaners Institute to learn about the chemistry, the machinery, and the business end of carpet and upholstery cleaning. With a loan from my mother, we bought a big maroon van, mounted a HydroCat steam extraction machine in it, and launched the first women-owned carpet and upholstery cleaning business in Northern California. For 5 years, from 1983 to 1988, Barbara and I operated Gemini Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning. Initially, customers were skeptical that women could do such strenuous work. After we'd measure a home or office and present the estimate, first-time customers would say, "So, you'll be sending a crew?" Barbara and I would answer, "We are the crew." Often they expressed astonishment that women would be moving the heavy furniture, but they gave us a chance and Gemini became successful. Many people discovered they preferred having women care for their home and businesses. When pipes burst, waterbeds leaked, or the Napa River flooded, we were also prepared with the equipment and training to do water damage restoration, a service few Napa carpet and upholstery cleaners offered. Barbara and I were not out to customers as a couple. We never expressed affection in public and even closed the curtain before giving each other a hug in our own living room. We worried about the impact on our business if people found out about us, living in fear, being on guard, and hiding the truth about our relationship took a toll. After 5 years, I transitioned out of the business, and a year later, Barbara and I separated. She continued operating Gemini Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning by herself for another 22 years in Napa, a good example of a woman's success in non-traditional work. Making a difficult decision. While Gemini was getting established, I continued teaching. I was active in the Napa College Part-Time Teachers Association, which participated in a lawsuit contesting the exploitation of part-time California Community College teachers. Colleges kept us just below the teaching assignment level at which they would have to give us benefits and access to the tenure track evaluation process. In 1983, our association won that case. I was offered a choice between back pay and a full-time position at Napa College. By then, I was enjoying running Gemini, researching a book, and working on my PhD, all of which were possible because I taught only part-time. After years of no job security, however, never knowing from semester to semester if I would be offered enough classes to make a living, could I refuse a tenure track position? I went backpacking at Point Reyes to think it through. I decided to turn down the full-time job and accept the $37,000 in back pay I should have received over the previous 10 years. That money allowed Barbara and me to travel around the U.S. and Canada interviewing people for my first book, publishing Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence. Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence is an anthology of 50 ex-nuns and current nuns' true stories about their convent experience and the discovery of their sexual orientation. My co-editor, Rosemary Kerb Keefe, and I received support from our colleges during the 3 years we worked on the book. Rosemary was the director of women's studies at Florida's Rollins College, which offered their computers for her to use. Napa College gave me permission to use its new computer lab when no classes were being held. I didn't mention the title or precise topic of the book. My Napa friends Lauren Coodley and Karen Verton gave me invaluable feedback, and Ruth Bates, by then in Seattle, shaped, edited, and proofread every page. When the book was published in 1985, Rosemary and I were featured in Newsweek, The New York Times, and The LA Times. We were interviewed on Sally Jesse Raphael, The Phil Donahue Show. Our book was translated into 7 languages and published in 11 countries, and we appeared on TV and radio shows around the world. It felt schizophrenic to be so outrageously visible in the wider world while still being rather closeted in Napa. The San Francisco Chronicle, where our book was on the bestseller list, eventually ran a double-page color spread about Rosemary and me. That article was both thrilling and terrifying, a little too close to home. I decided that if the Napa Register requested an interview, I would decline. The Register never called. I don't remember how I dared read a chapter from Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence at the 10th anniversary of the Women's Reentry Program at Napa College, but there I am in the 1986 program Evie Trevithan saved, now in the Napa Valley Historical Society archives. Conclusion. I am grateful to have lived and worked in Napa in the 1970s and 1980s. I benefited from an extraordinary flourishing of feminism there, developing deep, precious friendships that have nurtured and sustained me ever since. Those 2 decades transformed my life. Nancy Manahan, PhD, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Postscript. This is not in the book, but in case anyone is interested, since 1990 until today, 2020, I left Napa in 1992, moved back to Minnesota, started teaching English again at Rochester Community College, and after 2 years at Minneapolis Community College. I fell in love with Becky Bowen, whose father was the mayor of Medelia, where we both grew up with 6 years difference in our age. I published another book called On My Honor, Lesbians Reflect on Their Scouting Experience. And Becky and I co-wrote a book called Living Consciously, Dying Gracefully, A Journey with Cancer and Beyond, about the last years and death of my brother Bill's wife, Diane Manahan. I spent 3 winters teaching English and Latin American film studies and literature in Costa Rica, where Becky and I built a home and lived for 7 winters. We bought a condominium at Naughty Beach Condominiums off the coast of Cancun on Isla Mujeres and have spent many winters there. In 2018, we bought a home at Carefree in North Fort Myers, Florida, a community of 500 lesbians, and we now spend the winters at Carefree and summers in Minnesota. Becky and I spoke private vows with each other in 1994 when I moved into her home in Minneapolis. And we spoke our legal vows and got married legally in San Francisco in 2008. In 2013, I developed rheumatoid arthritis and a lung condition called bronchiectasis, which has to some extent curtailed our travels, especially transatlantic flights or transpacific flights. We are both very active as lesbian activists and political activists, helping to get same-sex marriage legalized in Minnesota in 2013. And our lives today are rich and full and very, very satisfying. I still am very close friends with Lauren Coodley from Napa, and with the daughter I helped raise, Caitlin McCune, and am godmother to her oldest son, Oscar. I'm still very close friends with Ruth Bates, who still lives in Seattle, and Lynn Tuft, whom I didn't mention in my story, but is an artist and was a very important part of my Living in Process group in Napa. I appreciate the opportunity from Sudie Pollock and the Napa Valley Historic Society to contribute a piece to A Rumbling of Women, and I appreciate this offer, this opportunity to read my piece out loud and to add this addendum. October 2020, Carefree in North Fort Myers, Florida.